You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married. Well, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great.
I'm a little frosted tonight.
What? Is it dessert time? What are you frosted about?
No, you know, I'm frosted about the doggone NFL people taking a knee and raising fists again when I thought we were through with this last year when the NFL came out and said, you can't do this anymore. And now they've caved in to the Players League and or committee or whatever it is that the players complained about the decision. And now they're doing it again.
Well, I'll tell you the truth, honey. I didn't think it was the end of anything. I think these people are of such a mind that they're going to double down, and that's exactly what they've done. And we're in the preseason, and already they've started the same BS as they did before, and they've doubled down on it. You know, the Philadelphia Eagles, just this last week during preseason, what did they do? 11 of their guys took a knee during the national anthem. It's absolutely disgraceful.
Well, it is disgraceful. And, you know, the thing is, where were these guys during the off season? Were they complaining about social injustice then? Or is it only on the field where they can grandstand in front of America and call attention to themselves?
Well,
they're not calling attention to any social injustice.
You know what? They're trying to in their own inimitable way. But, you know, that's just what it is with these guys, okay? These guys are fake social justice warriors. You know what I like, though? I like a little, a little karma and a little payback, because that same game, right after that same game I just mentioned with the Philadelphia Eagles, well, the security detail from the Philadelphia Police Department, I don't forget, they're in uniform, but they're working off duty. But they're working for the NFL, so you got to just love this. Afterwards, when the players went to their locker rooms, they depend on the security detail to escort them to their buses. Okay?
Oh.
So, you know, Philadelphia, it's such a safe city that the players, these big, huge players, you know, these 250, 350 pound guys, these linebackers and stuff, they need a police escort just to get out in the parking lot where their bus is. Well, guess what these guys did? While these guys were had taken a shower and, you know, getting dressed in their duds to leave the stadium, leave the locker room, the police force, security force, went in front of their locker room. They took a knee, all right, and they raised their fists in the air and they yelled, "Blue Lives Matter."
Oh, good for them.
And then their commander for that detail dismissed them and they went home. Right?
Oh, I love that.
No, there's more to it.
Okay.
So what happened is the players come out and they go, uh-oh, our security detail's not here. Where did they go? So they're asking around and they found out that their security detail left. Guess what these guys did? They were forced to have a slumber party in their own locker room till about 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning.
What?
When the entire stadium parking lot finally cleared out. And then they kind of, like a bunch of sheep, meekly crawled out to their buses and left.
So what were they afraid of to walk out to their buses? Because every fan in that stadium has to walk out to their car without a police escort.
Well, there
you
go.
What were they afraid of? Were they afraid of the fans? Were they afraid of the people that they made mad by raising their fists and taking a knee? Or were they... I don't know. What were they afraid of, Ron?
Well, I don't know what they're afraid of, but apparently it's just the hypocrisy, because the very people that they're putting down, and I know everybody talks about, you know, the disrespect for the flag and the disrespect for the military, but you know what? Police officers protect people's civil rights every single day.
Yeah.
Single day.
Absolutely.
So to me, it's a disrespect for law enforcement and first responders, as well as the military. Okay, these guys and gals that wear a badge, they put their time in every single day, and we've had another year of dramatic increases in officers being shot and murdered by suspects out in the field.
Yeah, the officers don't put their badge on one day a week for a big game.
For a lot of money.
It's every single day. And, you know, we have somebody like the guy, Malcolm Jenkins, the Eagles captain, right? So he's raising his fist at the game. And he says that it's his personal decision to keep these things at the forefront. Here's what I say, Malcolm. You don't have the right to do that at your employment. Your First Amendment doesn't apply the same way at your employment, and that's not your decision to make. And how dare you do that to all your team members and all the fans and the league and the team that pays you? This is not your personal decision to make to take a solitary act like that while you're on the job.
And you know what? Where are these damn sponsors that give these guys endorsements? Where are they? I mean, I think we ought to call those people out. We ought to find out who is endorsing these knee takers. We ought to make a list, sweetheart, and we ought to just put that out there. Because I'll tell you what, I'm going to find out who endorses these guys that take knees, and I swear to God, I'm going to write a letter to every single one, and I am not going to buy their products. And that, I think that if more of the fans started looking at this as far as a behavioral issue than just simply taking a knee, I think we could cut down on a lot of this thing.
Well, I think that they have lost a number of sponsors because the NFL took a big hit. And, you know, when you and I were in the airport the other day waiting for a plane, and we're sitting having a cup of coffee, hanging out, waiting for our plane to be called, and there was I wasn't paying attention, I wasn't watching TV, but apparently there was a TV close by us, right?
That had a game on.
Yeah, and they had a game on. And the way that I knew that, because I had my nose in my computer, was there was a guy walking through the airport, and I heard him. I didn't see him at the moment. I heard him say, keep walking. I'm not watching football. No football.
You know what? I was sitting right next to you. I heard the same thing. And that's when I knew there was a game on, because I looked up too and I saw that guy. And God bless him. Because I'll tell you what, you know me, I haven't watched a game since this damn thing started.
Right.
And I don't miss the NFL whatsoever. I'd much rather watch high school and college football. Okay, but let me tell you something else that recently happened that just shows you the whole hypocrisy of the NFL. So they send out letters every year in preseason, and actually pre-preseason, they send out letters to businesses and organizations asking for support. It's a marketing thing. And so they sent the NFL sent out a letter to Blue Lives Matter, okay? And of course, you know, that's a law enforcement support organization.
Sure.
Course, we're huge supporters of that.
Yes.
Well, they sent a letter out to that organization, and the president of that organization called over to the commissioner's office in the NFL and said, are you kidding me? Because the letter said something like, hey, you know, time to have a conversation with the NFL on how we can help your organization move forward. And they reminded, Blue Lives Matter president called the guy up and he says, hey, I just want to remind you of all the disrespect that your guys show. And as a matter of fact, he called out New York Jets running back Isaiah Crowell. I don't know if you remember him, but when he was with the Chicago Browns, he's the guy that posted that disgusting graphic of the Grim Reaper standing behind a uniformed police officer and slitting his throat.
Yep.
That's the guy,
yeah,
right?
Great.
Now
good,
he's working,
good hire, guys.
Great way to go. Yeah. And now he's working for the Jets.
Yeah, and there's nobody else that they could have picked for that job, right?
Nobody.
Nobody.
Nobody. Now, let me tell you something. There are tens of thousands of talented young men that would walk over burning coals to take the places of these ridiculous knee takers. I'm telling you what, it's just a freaking game. Okay, it's just a game. Okay, it's nice if they have talent. I don't particularly care. Okay, I want to see good football being played, and I want to see some damn patriotism from these hypocritical players at the NFL. It just pisses me off to no end.
Well, and you know what? I wrote an article on it's called NFL Heroes or Zeros.
I loved it.
That
I read it.
Just came out on America Out Loud. And here's my take on this. And I understand that I'm opinionated, but here's my take.
Do you think?
Yeah. you know, these guys are doing this whole thing to do a show. They don't do anything to help their so-called social injustice, which, by the way, I totally agree with, that even happens. But
you mean you disagree with it?
I don't agree
right.
that it happens at all. Okay, but
well, it happens, but
not to the extent that they say. Okay,
oh no, nowhere near the extent that they say.
But my point is, Ron, that these guys could take, if they really think that there's social injustice and they really think that there's too many black men in prison, of which 60% of the prison population is black, okay, but there's a reason for that. It's because those people committed the crimes that got them in jail. Nobody just went to their house and put them in jail. So people go to jail because they do something wrong.
Can I say, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Okay, go ahead with your thought. I'm listening.
Go ahead.
Well, no, what I was going to say, you said jail. Yeah, it's more than jail, it's prison.
Prison,
okay,
right.
And the only thing I wanted to call your attention to is, and you know this, I mean, how you know how difficult it is these days to actually get into prison, okay? Because there's so many diversion programs and things like that, you know, and plea bargains and everything. Let me tell you what, before you, unless you've committed a heinous, serious crime where you've seriously injured or killed somebody or raped somebody or armed robberied somebody, even the armed robbery, hell, they're going to divert you. You're not going to prison.
Right. And the point is, that if you really want to do something to help your black community because you think that they're being oppressed, okay, here's some things that you can do. You can make a commercial that speaks to your community and says, hey, you know, let's have, if you're a parent, if you make a baby, okay, stay with that family and raise that baby and raise it the best that you can. You can take your millions of dollars that you make at football and you can go start an organization that helps kids after school. I think that if they are really interested in so-called social injustice, that they ought to be being role models for these young people. They ought to be encouraging them to stay in school, stay out of gangs, respect law enforcement, respect their parents, respect their teachers, respect authority. If they make a child be responsible to that child and teach them to grow up in a proper way, that is how we can solve this problem, and not by raising your fist, because raising a fist helps nobody. What does it do for anybody in the world? It does nothing. Do something active to help your community and help those that you feel are socially oppressed. That's the answer to this.
Well, you know, a lot of these guys do that type of work.
Absolutely.
Okay? But nowhere near the amount of guys that need to be doing this work. Okay, and what gets me about the NFL is, how many players do you think there are in the entire NFL? Okay, a couple of thousand maybe?
Oh, out of the entire, that's a lot.
I don't know. Okay, well, let's just say that there's 2,000 in the entire NFL. Look at the amount of crime that NFL players do, compared to their, you know, very, very, very tiny footprint in America. Okay, but yet they commit murders, they commit rapes, a lot of domestic violence, a tremendous amount of drug use, a lot of illegal weapons carrying, a lot of resisting arrest.
A lot of beating up their girlfriends.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, and I just said
wives,
that, okay?
Yeah.
So, you know, what the hell are these guys talking about? As a percentage, as a community themselves, NFL community, they commit an inordinate amount of crime in consideration or comparison of the footprint in American society. So I don't want to hear a damn thing about those guys. I'm with you. They need to be involved in engaging their community and engaging their young men and young women and moving those kids forward.
Well, and what they're doing by disrespecting our country and our police officers is they are perpetuating this divide. And they're not helping the divide, they're perpetuating it. And they're showing these young people that it's okay to basically to badmouth police. Now, I'll tell you something else that I thought was really, really interesting today, Ron. That every year, Gallup does a poll. Actually, they do it several times a year on the respect for police officers. And America's respect for police officers, and this runs the gamut from all different races, not just white people, it's all races, is at its highest level since 1967.
Well, I got to tell you something. I find that really surprising. I did read that Gallup poll. I think out of 15 different professions, I think law enforcement was for sure in the top three. I think the military was, I think, number one. But I'll tell you what, you'd never know that listening to the mainstream media and some of these politicians. Never in a minute.
And the thing is that, and this is just now, okay, just came out now, that 76% of Americans say they have a great deal of respect for police and the police basically in their area. And that's up 12% over last year. That's huge. So 76%, and the biggest number that we had was 1967 was 77%. So, you know, that's huge.
Yeah, when you and I were in high school.
Yeah. Quit bringing up age. That's huge. So there's a huge disconnect here between what the NFL is saying about police oppression and what real American people in the country by far think and know about their police officers.
Well, I got to tell you, I've got no respect for the vast majority of the owners in the NFL because I think they're a bunch of sissies. If you can't control your employees, and that's what they are, they're employees, they're not there involuntarily, okay? If you can't control your work environment and you can't control your conditions of working with your employees, then what the hell good are you? Because you're really, and your company's going to go down the toilet.
Yeah, because the crimes that are committed are it's a colorblind thing. A crime is a crime by whoever commits it.
It's a behavior. That's what a crime is. It's a behavior.
And we need to change the behaviors regardless of who is doing them. And fist raising and knee taking is helping no one in this country. And I get so annoyed with it. And that's why I turn all my attention to sports and other things that are patriotic. And this includes things like, you know, when we watch the Oscars and the award
program.
But
we don't watch the Oscars anymore.
I know, the other self-aggrandizing programs.
We don't watch any of that
stuff
anymore.
Where they want to make a political statement, leave me out of it. And I think most Americans feel that way. Just leave us out of it. Play your football game and we can enjoy it. But you have no right as an employee of the NFL
to place your values on us.
Yes.
And you know what?
Yep.
And I'll just leave it with this. Hey, watching sports is a behavior too, okay? When I watch sports, I watch it for decompression and entertainment and recreation. That's why I watch it. I don't want to see controversy. I don't want to see politics. I don't want to see fights. I don't want to see any of that stuff. I want to see a good... I want to see a sport that I enjoy played well and played professionally by gentlemen. I don't want to see a bunch of thugs out there on the field taking a knee, talking about social injustice 1 minute and beating the hell out of each other on the field in another minute.
And you know what I want to see? I want to see those NFL players give people a hand and not a fist or a knee.
I'm with you, sweetheart.
The Out and Out Perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Tired of watching the same old sporting events?
Well, kick it up a notch and get ready, America, for something you've never seen before. It's the new generation of Western superstars. Shorty Gorham's American freestyle bullfighting. Who will win? The acrobatic, tough-as-nails Western superstar or the meanest half-ton fighting bulls on Earth? This is one of the most extreme sports you'll ever see in an arena. This is hand-to-horn combat on a level playing field. Go to ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. It's bullfighting time.
There are so many interesting things to talk about today, Ron. It's like I don't know where to start. But here's where I'm going to start. With Poop Patrol. Did you know this is...
Wait a minute. Hang on. Lock your children up.
Don't... This is a real thing that San Francisco has hired a poop patrol to clean up the feces on the street from all their homeless.
You know what? I used to be on the poop patrol when I worked for my dad, who was a veterinarian. I've cleaned up more poop than anybody I know.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Maybe I should apply.
With three dogs at this house, I feel like I'm always on poop patrol. The mayor, London Breed in San Francisco, says that there's more feces on the street and needles and garbage and things than she's ever seen, and it's gotten out of hand. And what do you think? Oh my gosh, was this not predictable?
Well, who started this problem in the first place?
Yeah, I know.
Okay, who's been putting up the programs to cause the homeless people to expand, to resonate with the city of San Francisco, and to literally move into the city of San Francisco in droves? Okay, this is their fault. And you know what angers me about this poop patrol thing and all the problems with the homelessness in San Francisco, which is endemic, you know, throughout the state of California and the big cities and stuff. But I was born, I know it doesn't sound like it, but I was born and raised in San Francisco.
I'm sorry.
And I know, and I hate to say it, but I'm, you know, and I probably would, deny it if somebody asked me, but you know, I used to be proud of the city of San Francisco, but we're going back about 30 years ago now. Okay, it was a beautiful city, the city by the bay, you know, Tony Bennett, you know, all of that, and they have just ruined it. And I know I have work up in San Francisco from time to time, and I can't even drag you up there. You don't even want to go.
No, I don't want to go. And you know what? They have 7,500 homeless people on their streets.
Oh, there's more than that.
Well, that's how many they claim. They spend $280 million of the taxpayers' money on that homeless issue. It's out of control. But anyway, I just had to bring up to you that there was a poop patrol that is their solution there. It's not helping those homeless get off the street.
Right.
It's just getting the poop cleaned up. That's the solution.
And you know what? This is not rocket science. These problems with the homeless can be addressed. But part of the problem is there's no buy-in from the city of San Francisco, city and county, and there's no buy-in from their criminal justice system, which means their judges and things like that. This is a multiphasic socio-criminal problem, okay? And they have to look at it like that. This is a behavioral problem, mental health issues, poverty. There's a lot of things like this, and these people just do a lot of talking, and there's no action.
Oh,
and the judges there ought to be ashamed of themselves.
Yep, absolutely. And people are moving out of there left and right. Well, somebody that I absolutely admire and love listening to, because I wish I was as quick with my quips as she is Sarah Sanders.
I love Sarah.
So a reporter asked her how many blacks work in the White House since now Omarosa's gone.
Right.
Right?
Like, and she was the token black, right?
Well, I don't even know. But Sarah Sanders turned it right around on her, and she said, how many African-American staffers do you have in your newsroom? And I love that, because statistically, what is interesting is that newsrooms are not as diverse as is the everyday population.
Well, you're absolutely right. Yeah. I hang around newsrooms all the time as a media expert, right? I know that.
So here we are, you know, with them complaining about the White House when they don't do the same thing, and it's more of their hypocrisy. Oh, I love how she comes up with the answers, and she's so quick with them. I wish I had that talent.
Gets it from her dad.
Well, she probably does. She's probably been brought up in that type of an environment. Speaking of Omarosa, what do you think?
I tell you what, I am just so disgusted with her on so many different levels, and how disappointing for President Trump when you take someone who was an absolute nothing and you enhance her brand, right, on The Apprentice and everything, and then you turn around and you give her a job at the White House, okay, and then she turns around and goes in there and apparently, and God knows how these types of things happen, somebody needs to get involved there, but she is surreptitiously recording not just one person, but it seems like everybody. It seems like everybody that she had a conversation with where she thought maybe, you know, something was going to happen during that conversation, she's apparently recorded it. I'll tell you what, I think it should be a crime. I know in some states, surreptitious tape recording of conversations in a private setting is against the law.
You know, and you would really think, especially in the Situation Room, that it would be against the law. And if that's the case, I sincerely hope that she gets prosecuted for it, because what she did was totally unethical. And, you know, the Dems may say, oh, you know, we're really happy that she did that, and ha, ha, ha. No, this is not something you want anybody doing in any White House at any time. This is wrong. And, you know, I am like you. I'm disgusted with her. It's a thing that's in the news. And, you know, it's just, even her friends, Ron, are completely bailing on her and calling her dishonest about this whole situation.
Well, you know, sweetheart, I just think that she's a flash in the pan. I don't think a lot of people are going to buy her book. I think there's some real credibility issues. But I'll tell you what, I'm a little concerned that someone can be inside the White House, and especially in the Situation Room, which really should be the most secure room in the United States, in any governmental office. I mean, even more secure than the CIA. And for somebody to be able to walk in there with a recording device and record surreptitiously conversations in a secure, high-level security setting is beyond me. I mean, you know, as a detective, I've been in many rooms and where we use, you know, recording device, you know, devices that will tell us if somebody's recording. Right. You know, I don't know how they're made, but I've used them before. And all I do for the little is look for the little red button that starts flashing when a recording device enters a secure area. And why they don't have something like that in the White House is absolutely beyond me. As a matter of fact, I thought that in some areas of the White House, you can't even go into a room without leaving your cell phone or any other recording device that you have behind.
I'm sure that's the case, but obviously she didn't follow policy.
Well, no, she didn't.
Which is why she no longer works there.
Well, I'm going to tell you what. I'm not an attorney, but I stayed in the Holiday Inn once. But I think that she's going to be in serious trouble. I think she's going to be in criminal legal trouble. And I also hear that maybe she will be a defendant in litigation. I know she's already said some things about Sean Spicer that he says did not happen. It's defamation, perhaps. And if it is, and certainly a breach of contract with the White House, because I know that everybody that works at the White House, when they leave, they have signed a non-disclosure agreement.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
I don't know if you can litigate that, but I think we're going to find out pretty shortly.
Well, on her way out, the very day that she was fired, she already knew what she was going to do. She already called a friend of hers and said, you know, I'm going to put these things out.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so she had a plan all along. And, you know, the thing, Ron, is loyalty is big in my life. I think it's really big in your life. And just to be that disloyal to somebody who's been that good to you it's just wrong on any level, in any job, anywhere, at any time.
Well, you know, I think good is understating what President Trump did for her. Okay, he provided her with a great opportunity. Anytime that you have a job, you are offered a job where you can be part of the United States government, defend this nation, deal with security issues, or assist the president in the United States in his mission, that is a tremendous honor. And to turn around and to just betray that honor that was you know, given to you is just despicable.
Yeah. And, you know, this seems to be just crazy week in my mind, because there's so many crazy things going on, and you feel like it just can't get worse, and it gets worse. So, you know, then we have these two jihadi people in New Mexico who are
the child abusers and maybe murderers.
Well, I absolutely think murderers, because you can say that 3-year-old boy died, but either way, it's still homicide because he died at the hands of somebody else.
Well,
but
wait
anyway,
a minute. Okay, but hang on.
That's not necessarily murder.
No, wait a minute. I don't even want to get to the homicide.
Okay.
There was a dead body of a 3-year-old child found on the premises. I think there's a coroner's inquest. I think we're going to find out how that child died. Okay? But if it's found on the premises, and I think this kid was sickly. Was he not sickly?
Yes, and he kidnapped the child.
Okay, well, there you go. I mean, that we know that's a felony. That's the second most serious crime, murder being the first one, kidnapping second. But I think that they are certainly persons of interest, if not suspects, in a suspicious death of a child.
Well, yes, and Dr. Martinelli.
you can call me Ron.
if he kidnapped that child, and that child died due to the circumstances of the kidnapping and the things that happened thereafter, there's still a crime there. More than one, by the way.
Oh, sure.
So everything, you know, would that child have died if the child was still in the place he was before he was kidnapped?
I agree with you.
But not for. But either way, here's the real big but about this case is the judge that let these people out on $20,000 bail.
Now, did they make bail? Did they actually
make bail?
They're out.
They're out.
Ah, just disgraceful.
Yeah, it was a signature bond. Yeah.
Holy cow. Yeah. Who signed for them?
Well, I don't know who signed for them, but this Judge Sarah Backus, what she said, which really ticked me off, is she said, well, you know, we know that they, you know, had these 11 kids there, and we know that they were in deplorable conditions, and but you haven't shown me, prosecutors, that this guy is really a danger to the community.
You know what? I worked child abuse and neglect. That was my first assignment in the Bureau. And I will tell you that 20,000, you got 11 kids that are living in squalor, okay? That is absolute child neglect. And you have to look at each child as a separate criminal count. Child abuse, child neglect. That's 22 counts right there. The bail for just a couple of kids would amount to $20,000. You've got 11 kids. Now, I know something about this judge that now has, moved over to New Mexico, but she was originally from the San Francisco County Public Defender's Office.
Wow, that explains
a lot. So look at that mentality. We just finished talking about poop patrol in the city, and that's just the type of mentality that you get out of that People's Republic over there.
Well, they had weapons there. They had, you know, the whole child abuse situation.
Right.
This judge didn't feel that it was so inappropriate for them to be teaching these young children how to shoot weapons, to go and commit terrorist acts on schools, and by the way, they also said on police officers, on other organizations. So that none of this was enough. And what is enough, Ron? What is enough to get people like this to stay in jail? Because are they not a threat to society right now? Absolutely, of course they are.
Sure. And, I know that the prosecutor, I think I heard something today, that the prosecutor's office is appealing the decision of the judge. Okay, I don't know whether she was elected or how she became, you know, the judge there, but the people better take notice of that judge. Okay, and if she was elected, next time it comes around, somebody better do something about it. And I don't know if the governor can get involved in that, but that's certainly something that people have to look into, because that's no sense of justice for me.
No, I just feel terribly for those children, and thank God that they're out of there right now. So one more thing that has been in the news, which is just so much stuff happening, Mr. Brennan got his security clearance revoked.
Oh, the former CIA director. Well, I'll tell you what. I just do not understand why, when people leave federal office and they have security clearances, why those security clearances are not immediately removed. Okay, they can be reinstated if they call them back for duty, you know, sort of special duty or something like that. But I'll tell you what, when you leave the police department, you don't get security access to anything anymore.
No.
Okay? And that's a municipal job, for God's sakes.
And by the way, that's in any job. So even in any job that you work in, if you have, say, a card key to get in the door, that is removed from you when you leave. You cannot just go in and access files and things. So I agree with you totally that we need to change that. But now we have Comey chiming in and deriding the president over this and saying that the president is using security clearances as, you know, a game and pawns and things.
And making money off of it.
Who, President Trump?
No. The people, are you referring to the security people from before?
Comey.
Like Brennan and all those guys?
Yeah, Comey is saying that President Trump is using this to harm his enemies.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood.
Yeah, himself being an enemy, Brennan being an enemy, and those types of things. No, these people have been enemies to this president.
You know what? I was just kind of remembering when you and I lived in Southern California, and we had a dear friend of ours that was a retired CIA agent. You remember?
Yes.
Okay. Both he and his wife had been in the CIA. She passed away, mm-hmm. and they brought him back to do, you know, special intelligence research. We won't say where or what was being done, but you and I were aware of it, and they reinstated his security clearance because he had a particular niche of intelligence and contacts and assets that nobody else had. And so that is an excellent reason to call somebody back in and say, hey, look, can you work a specialized assignment, not a field assignment, but an intelligence and asset assignment where you're managing assets, and go ahead and give him the security clearance that he needs to access, you know, CIA computers and databases. That's it. But, you know, we also have people that we know that were CIA agents, and when they were done with their career, they pulled everything. They pulled their badges, pulled the security clearances, they pulled everything, and they were civilians.
Well, they should on all of these people. And the other thing that was in the news that I found extremely insulting was that Peter Strzok was finally fired, which was great.
Yeah,
I'm not insulted about that.
And when are they going to get Orr? Orr is the next guy.
Yeah, he's the next guy. But who in the history of ever in this country, Ron, as a top official in a government job, gets fired and then goes on
a GoFundMe page.
GoFundMe page and asks for money for himself.
Yeah,
but
guess
does
what?
That?
And I don't know who does that. He's the first guy, I think.
A lot of people have done it.
But guess what? He's already got $300,000 in donations.
Yeah, he asked for $250,000. He got that, so now he upped it to $400,000 that he wants.
And I'm telling you what, I think he's going to get that too. And what does that say about these American citizens that would allow a person like this to be in the Federal Bureau of Investigations? And I believe their adage, their saying is also, I think, fidelity, bravery, and integrity. Okay, FBI, besides Federal Bureau of Investigations. And here's a guy, including Comey and the other guy, McCabe, that didn't meet any of those criteria.
How do you ask the American people for money? I thought that to have a GoFundMe page, I thought you had to really have something like, a sick person or an accident.
No,
or
I think you can have it.
Anybody? Well, I heard today that somebody had one and they made him take it down because it was, you know, not for the proper cause. Peter Strzok should not be allowed to have a GoFundMe page, and I am totally insulted about that. I just can't even believe that that's happening in the United States of America by an FBI person.
And that's that.
That's that.
I'm going to grab some coffee.
Okay.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
How sometimes when we're driving in the car, you say, you're not even talking to me. Talk to me. And I say, okay, what do you want to talk about? And you say, let's talk about our relationship. And I say, okay, you start. And then there's dead silence in the car, right? The conversation never goes beyond that.
Hey, it's about talking while married, not driving and talking while married.
I'm confused. Anyway, let's talk about a relationship.
Okay, so, let's do that.
not because I want to talk about our relationship, but, you know, and I'm sure that everybody that we know has had this happen, and it's been a little bit on my mind. So we have a couple of sets of good friends who are having some trouble in their relationships.
Yeah, and that's sad because we love all of them. You know, they're great friends, but they're going through, you know, a hiccup in their relationships, and, you know, one's a little bit more serious than the other. But, you know, I mean, you want to talk about that?
Well, you know, here's what it makes me think. Along with that show that I watch from time to time on TV, I always forget the name of it, but, Marriage Boot Camp, right?
Oh, God, I hate that show. You do. I hate it.
I know, but you know what? It makes me realize when people are this messed up in their relationships, it makes me realize that there is something to be said about having a good relationship, Ron.
Oh, and, sure.
And, you know, when our friends talk to us in different situations about their problems, and by the way, I understand everybody goes through marital problems over the time that they're married. There's nobody that gets away from that because everybody's not happy all the time.
That's true.
But I don't want to see people split up over things that, you know, kind of making mountains out of molehills.
Things that are curable in the relationship.
Right. And it makes me think, you know, like how do we manage to keep our relationship strong? Because I have to say that for all the time that we've been married, we've had a very strong marriage. Would you agree?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So what is different that makes a good relationship that, because so many people get divorced right now and marriages don't succeed right now.
Yeah.
So what's happening that allows some people to stay together and other people not to?
Wow. Well, okay, since you've asked me, number one, both of us have been down bad roads before.
Okay? Sure.
And we learned lessons from those experiences, and I think made us better people, made us stronger people, made us people that are not inclined to make those mistakes. I think that we hold each other out as equals, and
I think that's really important. In
I really do. No, I think, you know, I've said this so many times. I mean, I absolutely admire you. You know, you're my hero, and I'd like to think I'm your best fan, and I'd like to think the same thing with you. You know, the one thing that I like about our relationship is even if we're, you know, ticked off at each other, one person's ticked off at the other, it's usually me that's the offender. I'll give that up. But we always have a rule that's going to get patched up before we go to bed. Okay, so there's nobody angry going to bed and nobody sleeping on a couch and nobody, you know, doing something like that. We work it out, we kiss and make up, and we're stronger for it every single time. But I think the thing that really helps us out is we really do make a concerted effort to talk to each other and to work these things out and figure out what the problem is and how can that be repaired. And then we're always really good about apologizing, whoever the offender is. Like I said, it's mostly me.
You said I don't apologize, Ron.
Well, yeah, you don't. You know, we could have a disagreement about that right now. But yeah, you know, yeah. But what I'm saying is, we have mutual respect for each other. Let me just say one more thing, and that is we draw lines in our relationship as to what we will not cross when we have a disagreement. Am I right about that?
Absolutely, and I think that is a key with people, because I really try to see why people are feeling. I mean, we have kids that are married. Our kids are, you know, starting out in their lives with being married, and you know, I don't want to see them ever get divorced. So any words of wisdom that I can think of and that we can come up with, I want to share with them. And I do think that that's a really big one. I think that not crossing lines. I think people cross lines with each other too much. Like they get it. They say personal things
that they can never take back.
Yeah, personal insults that hurt somebody, and you can't take that hurt back.
Right.
So an argument needs to be about the argument. It doesn't need to be a personal attack on the person.
Right.
And I think that that's been something that maybe not even consciously that we've done, but we both have that respect for one another to not cross that line, because you don't want to hurt your partner that way. And people that do want to hurt their partner that way, that's a bad scenario.
That's not healthy. Yeah. And that's what I personally refer to as red flags. Okay, so red flag relationships. And one day I'm going to write that darn book.
I know you talk about it.
But you know what, honey? You brought up something that I think is really important. And you mentioned respect. But I'm going to just take it to a different level for a second. And I'm going to talk about each person in a relationship has got to have respect for themselves.
That's a good point.
They've got to be centered. They have, and that's one of the problems with one of those relationships, one of those married couples. One person is more sublime, the other person is more gregarious and outgoing. One person has very high confidence, and the other person lacks confidence because they don't have sufficient respect for themselves, even though they are a wonderful human being.
Everybody knows it but them.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's so strange, because here you've got, you're married to a wonderful person that goes out of their way to do things for you and to make you happy, and you're caught up in a jealousy or, something like that, where you don't feel confident about yourself and centered enough of yourself. Because if you do, you're not going to feel jealousies. If that person has never displayed a behavior that would cause you to believe that they were doing something, right, that would cause that jealousy.
Right. And I think that it's about being each other's best friend and having each other's back. I mean, those things are all really important. And I think it's also about, I'm a firm believer in, at least in our relationship, with the more that I give to you as my husband, the more that I get from you. And it's not that I'm giving something and I'm by giving something I'm losing something, right?
Right.
It's by giving something I'm actually gaining something. And I think that is kind of the heart of marriage that a lot of people have lost, that they want to begrudge their partner, attention or sex or whatever it is, because they're angry with something, so my husband worked too late tonight, so I'm going to, I'm not going to have sex with him, that kind of thing. And I always tell our girls that this is a big, big mistake that women make, that women, first of all, I'm sorry to say, Ron, men are very simple. Right?
You guys there you go.
Men are
there you go with your condescending
attitude. I'm not being condescending. But they're much more simple creatures than our women.
Now wait a minute. Are you saying we think with the wrong head?
No. Sometimes, yes. Actually. History will bear that out in so many ways. That's a whole other conversation we could have. But not with you. But I mean,
Thank you for saving me. Just history of the world.
Okay,
right.
But I always tell women that, and I tell the girls in my own family, sex is important to a man. It's a very, very important part of their relationship. And what does it hurt us? In fact, it does nothing but help us to go ahead and enjoy that relationship with our husband pretty much as often as possible.
And boy, I'll tell you what, I've got no complaints
okay.
there. And you know what? No, I mean, seriously, I mean, you got onto something that's kind of serious, and I really am enjoying you talking about this part of the advice that you give to the girls and things, because that is an important part, at least in my mind, of a relationship. I mean, specifically our relationship. I mean, I enjoy having a romantic, active sexual relationship. And I think that if you take that away from a man, you play games with a man like that, you withhold that, you posture and things like that, that, depending on the guy, of course, that can be so hurtful. And I think that really hurts the woman in the end, because then the guy begrudges the woman, and that's when they start kind of looking around. You know what I mean?
Well, that,
I think it's a huge mistake.
It works both ways too, because guys can withhold sex too. So
Boy, not this guy.
Here's my point. Sex should never be used as a punishment or a reward.
Absolutely. Okay?
It should be something between two people that works for both of them. Now, I read some time back and showed it to you, and we talked about this a lot, that there was a couple that, there was an article, and it said that these people tried to have sex every single day and see how that worked for their relationship.
Oh, I remember that experiment.
Yeah,
right?
Their relationship wasn't working well. They both had issues, but they decided that they were going to do this every single day. And what they found, they did it for a year. And, you know, sometimes you just don't feel like it, or you're angry at your partner for something, or you've had a bad day or whatever. They made themselves do it. And they said that it was the greatest thing, because where at first maybe you're, oh my gosh, you know, this is going to be an effort and I'm tired, by the end of what they were doing, they were both into it. They were both closer to each other. You know, they fall asleep in each other's arms, that kind of thing. And I think that those things are so important. There's things that people can do to improve their relationships. The bottom line is, and I don't want to, you know, dwell too much on sex, but it's a big part of a relationship. And it's a part that I think that young girls today play too many games with. And they use sex as a weapon in their relationship. And that should never happen. And guys can do the same thing. But, you know, I'm a girl, so I think like a girl. And I'm thinking that, you know, the young girls that I talk to or would give advice to, that would be the advice, is have that open relationship with your husband. And then, you know, also, it is about not crossing lines, and it's about doing for the other person. Because another friend of ours said something to us that I've never forgotten, and I probably won't say it right, and I'm hoping you remember better than I do. But what he told us was that, you know, I'm not married for myself. I'm married for my husband.
It was something like that. Yeah, it was.
And that's so true, because the more that you give to somebody in a relationship, the more that you get. And that's just a wonderful thing that happens. So people should be open to that and open up themselves, you know?
Well, you know, and since
and I
we're...
just threw my whole computer down.
But you know what? And since we're talking while married, I think communication is such a huge thing. And I think when young people, you know, first start getting together, there is the, and believe me, I've been there, okay, the physical attraction
right.
of the other person. You know, yeah, you're young, people are attractive, you're attracted to them because they're attractive, and you start a relationship there. But ultimately, when that relationship starts getting serious, you've got to really assess that person and say to yourself, can I talk with this person? Can I have meaningful conversations with, you know, I mean, you can't have sex all the time, right? You can't be out drinking and partying and, well, one would wish. But you can't be doing that all the time. Sometimes there are special moments where you have to have a meaningful conversation with that person.
Right.
Okay? And I'll tell you what, I've been down that road where you just couldn't, you know, you're attracted to the person because they look great, you know, my much, much younger years, okay, long before Linda. And, you know, and now you've got to have a conversation. You know, you've had sex, you've had you're in the post-cigarette moment. Okay,
right.
And you want to have a nice conversation, and you ended up with somebody that you can't have a conversation with.
Well, yeah, you have to figure out if your values are the same in a relationship.
I think
which
that's
is
important.
Huge.
Yep.
It can be your religion, it can be your ethics, it can be
your politics, how you
raise your kids. All those things you need to talk about. So that the point being that you marry the right person to start with, because so many of us, and both you and I have been there and done that, married the wrong people.
Right.
The first time we got married. Why is that? Because we didn't make those judgments. Because you're in those kind of...
Well, you're younger, you're less mature, you're less experienced. And, you know, I think... And I'm just going to say something about women for a second. I think women think that they can save the guy. They can change him.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that, and I'll be honest with you, is in my first relationship, the person that was attracted to me, that I ended up getting married, they were attracted to me and married me because of who I was at that time. You know, the things that I was doing, mm-hmm. you know, things I was involved with, the things that I was known for. And they married me for those things and then tried to change me. And I thought that the reason that they were trying to change me wasn't because I was doing anything wrong behaviorally, is because I think that they just weren't centered and they were jealous. And they thought that if he still is that person, then other women are going to be attracted to him like I was, right? And what it ended up being was just a horrible experience for me when I was showing total love, total loyalty, and everything to that person. That person, it goes back, that person just didn't have the respect or the confidence in themselves.
Well, and that's it. So a relationship, to me, that is the most important thing, is it's like three circles, okay?
Oh, okay.
One circle is over to the left, and one circle is over to the right, and that's both people. And they have their own lives and their own center place and their own, maybe their own career, or their own self-confidence, their own abilities, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have that circle in the middle, which intersects with both sides of those.
Ah, I get
where that's sure. their life together. But that doesn't make, you don't lose yourself when you get married. You still are that same person.
Right.
So you know, you still have you and I still have our own jobs. You know, I run a company, you run a company. We both do our own thing, but we have our life together. And I think that those are the things that make it work. When you have two healthy psyches in people to start with, then you can have a healthy marriage. And if you don't, then people need to fix themselves first and then get into a relationship, because a relationship doesn't fix you.
You know, I think you raised a really good point. And the other thing I would probably add to that is that one person in the relationship shouldn't take over the other person.
You
know
absolutely.
What I'm saying?
Right.
You know,
yes.
Again, there has to be that equality. They have to be, you know, partners. There has to be a symbiotic relationship between them. They have to share things together, because there's going to be good moments and bad moments, but you still need your wingman. And, you know, one of the things that I've always appreciated about our relationship is that, you know, if I'm having a bad day or something's not going exactly right, or maybe a case didn't go right for me and I'm feeling all down in the mouth, because there's nothing I can do about it, you're always the person that is right there in my corner and picking me up. And I try to reciprocate.
And you
I try to do the same thing for you, you know.
You're my biggest backer, Ron.
Oh, you know, I just love you to pieces. But I think that is so important. And it's such a shame that some of the younger people don't get that. And actually, some of the older people that we know that have had relationships for a long time, they don't get it either.
Yeah, and I want to see all our friends work things out, and you know, no matter what, we're going to love them, but relationships are important, and I just want to tell you that I love you.
And I love you too. Let's go to bed.